Okay, I want you to close your eyes for a second. Imagine you are 20 kilometers up. You're in the stratosphere. The sky above you isn't blue anymore. It's this deep, absolute ink black, even with the sun blazing.
It's the ultimate room with a view.
It is, but there's a catch. It's beautiful, it's quiet, and it is negative 60 degrees Celsius.
Which is an environment that human beings were definitely not designed for.
No, and neither were our electronics. This is the thing I never really thought about until I read through these notes.
Right.
We worry about our phones dying because, we watch too much TikTok or something.
Sure.
But up there, the battery doesn't die because it's empty. It dies because the chemistry inside of it it basically turns to sludge.
Exactly. It's not an energy problem at first, it's a mobility problem. The ions, they literally cannot move through the electrolyte.
And that is the setting for today's deep dive. We are looking at a project called the Stratosonde.
A high-altitude balloon project.
Yeah, and we're specifically tearing into a technical doc from their development blog. It's called the LoRaWAN Energy Budget.
And I know energy budget sounds like something you do with your accountant, to save a few bucks on the electric bill.
Right.
But in this context, it's a survival thriller.
It really is. It's a story about how you keep a radio talking when the laws of thermodynamics are actively trying to shut you up. So our mission today is to figure out, how do you design a machine that knows how to survive when its main power source freezes solid?
And the answer isn't just put a coat on it or add a heater. It's actually a master class in what I call systems thinking.
Systems thinking.
Yeah, it's about connecting the physics of radio waves, how we talk, to the physics of energy storage.
Okay, so let's get into the nuts and bolts, or I guess the volts and amps. To really get the stakes, we have to look at the cost of doing business.
The cost of sending a single message from the edge of space.
Right.
So how does that break down? Well, in the source material, they break this down into a fundamental equation. If you want to know how much energy a transmission costs, you multiply three things:
Okay.
voltage, current, and airtime.
Voltage times current times airtime. Okay, let's bring those down.
So voltage and current are mostly out of the engineer's control. They're using a specific radio chip, the STM32WLE5.
Right.
It runs at 3.3 volts.
Right.
And when it's transmitting at full power, it draws about 26 milliamps.
Can't they just, turn it down, whisper?
They could, but you have to remember where they are. They are 20 kilometers up, trying to talk to a gateway on the ground that might be 100 kilometers away.
You can't whisper across that distance.
You really can't. You need to shout. So the power, the loudness, is basically fixed.
So if you can't change the loudness and you can't change the voltage,
The only variable left in that equation is airtime.
how long you shout for?
Exactly. And this brings us to a concept that I think is really cool, but often misunderstood: spreading factors.
Yeah, I saw this all over the documentation. SF7, SF10, SF12. My brain immediately went to sunscreen.
It's a surprisingly similar concept, actually.
Really?
Yeah. With sunscreen, the higher the number, the more protection you have, but the thicker it is. With LoRaWAN, the higher the spreading factor number, the more protection you have against noise.
But the cost is time.
The cost is time.
Okay, so let's look at the extremes. What's SF7?
SF7 is the speedster. It's fast. Imagine you and I are in a quiet room. I can talk really fast like this, and you'd understand me perfectly.
Right.
That's SF7. In the Stratosonde data, sending a tiny 11-byte packet at SF7 takes just 59 milliseconds. It's a blip.
And because energy is tied to time, fast means cheap.
Extremely cheap. It costs about 5.0 millijoules of energy.
Okay, 5 millijoules. That's the price for a quick shout. But what if the room isn't quiet? What if we're at, say, a rock concert?
Then I can't talk fast. I have to slow dot down and enunciate every year word.
Okay.
That is SF10 or SF12. You're spreading the information out over more time to make sure it cuts through all that noise.
But that takes longer.
Much longer. If we jump up to SF10, that same 11-byte packet takes 387 milliseconds.
Whoa, from 59 to 387.
Right, so the energy bill just went up.
By how much?
It skyrockets. The cost goes from 5 millijoules to 33.2 millijoules. That is a 600% price increase just to talk slower.
But you get better range from that, right? That's the trade-off.
You get significantly better range. So logically, you'd think, okay, I'm in space. I want the max possible range. Let's just crank it to SF12.
That's what I would do. Turn the dial all the way up, maximum safety.
And that would be a complete disaster.
Why?
Two reasons. First, the energy. SF12 takes over 1.5 seconds to send that tiny packet.
A second and a half.
Yeah. It costs 132 millijoules. That is 26 times more expensive than SF7.
Ouch. Okay, so it drains the battery. I get that.
But there's an even bigger problem. It's illegal.
Wait, illegal? Like, the police are going to come after your space balloon?
The FCC might. The Stratosonde operates under US 915 regulations, and the radio spectrum is a shared resource.
Like a public park.
Exactly. You can't just go into the park with a megaphone and scream for an hour. There are rules.
Okay, that makes sense.
And one of those rules is dwell time. In the U.S., on these frequencies, you are not allowed to transmit for more than 400 milliseconds at a time.
Oh, I see where this is going. You said SF12 takes 1.5 seconds?
Which is 1,500 milliseconds. Way, way over the limit. So you literally cannot use the highest settings.
So it's not just a physics problem. It's a regulatory cage.
It is. And it's a tight one.
Yeah.
Even SF10, which takes 387 milliseconds. That is uncomfortably close to that 400 millisecond limit.
It's like driving 64 in a 65 zone.
Precisely. And that forces a constraint on the data itself. They can only send 11 bytes. If they tried to send a long error log or something, the time would shoot past 400 meters.
So they're boxed in SF10 for range, but only for tiny, tiny messages.
Right. Under normal conditions, Sunny, battery is warm, they use SF10, they drive right up to that speed limit.
But we're here to talk about when things go wrong.
Yes.
When it gets cold.
Here.
This is the part of the deep dive that just, it blew my mind. The cascading power architecture.
Mm.
Because usually, when I think of power, I think battery, done.
Right. But in high reliability engineering, you don't just have one bucket, you have a series of buckets, and they all work differently.
So paint that picture for us. How is this thing wired?
Okay. Imagine a waterfall.
Yeah.
At the very top, you have the solar panel. It pours energy into the main tank.
Which is the LTO battery.
The LTO battery.
Right? LTO. That's not what's in my laptop, is it?
No. Your laptop has lithium ion. Those are great for density, packing a lot of power in a small space. But they are divas about temperature. They hate the cold.
Ah.
The Stratosonde uses lithium titanate oxide, LTO. It's a different chemistry. Mm. It's much more robust and handles cold better. But even it has its limits.
Okay, so LTO is the main tank. What's downstream from that?
Below the battery, we have supercapacitors. Think of these as smaller, faster buckets.
And below that.
An aluminum polymer capacitor. An even smaller bucket.
And at the very, very bottom.
A ceramic capacitor bank. The tiniest thimble of energy storage you can imagine.
Why so many layers? Why not just one big battery?
Because of the regimes. As the balloon rises and the temperature plummets, these storage layers start failing, one by one.
It's like a video game where you lose armor as you go.
That's a great way to put it.
So let's walk through the levels. Level one, normal mode.
This is anything warmer than negative 50 Celsius. The LTO battery is happy. It has over 100 millijoules ready to go.
Plenty of cash in the bank.
Tons. So the balloon acts confidently. It uses SF10, that expensive long-range setting. It sends confirmed packets. It's having a full conversation.
But then night falls. It hits a cold pocket. We drop to, say, minus 55.
Now we're in degraded mode. The chemistry in that main battery starts to slug out. So the system switches to the supercapacitors.
Do supercaps freeze?
They do, eventually, but they hold out longer. In this mode, they can still provide about 50 millijoules.
Okay, and our expensive SF10 message costs 33, so we're still good.
We're still okay. We can still afford the fancy transmission.
But then we hit negative 58 degrees, emergency mode.
Now we're in real trouble. The electrolyte in the supercapacitors freezes. They stop working. They're useless. So now we're relying on that aluminum polymer capacitor.
And this is where the math gets really scary.
It does. That aluminum cap is small. It only holds about 12.4 millijoules of useful energy.
Wait, hold on. Let me check my notes here. We said the SF10 transmission, the long range one, costs 33 millijoules.
Correct.
But we only have 12.4 in the bucket.
You see the problem? The physics just says, no, you cannot send that message. The voltage would collapse halfway through and the radio would just reset.
So the balloon is effectively gagged.
Not at SF10. It can't.
Yeah.
And this is where it has to make a hard choice. As the temperature drops below negative 63, we enter beacon mode. The aluminum caps are gone. We are down to the ceramics.
Do ceramics freeze?
And that's the magic of ceramics. They aren't chemical. They're physical. They store energy in an electric field. They just don't care if it's negative 20 or negative 80. They work.
But they're tiny.
They are. Yeah. The ceramic bank also holds about 12.4 millijoules.
So we have 12.4 millijoules. We can't afford the 33 millijoule message. But earlier, you said the fast message SF7 only costs 5 millijoules.
And that is the match. It is one of the most elegant pieces of engineering I've seen in a long time.
Wherein?
The engineers size the ceramic bank to be 12.4 millijoules, specifically because they knew the absolute minimum cost to scream for help was 5 millijoule.
It's a perfect fit. They have enough for one shot with a 2.5 times safety margin.
Exactly. They stopped trying to be polite. They stopped trying for long range. They switched to SF7, the fast, cheap shout, because it's the only thing that fits in the budget.
But wait, we established earlier that SF7 is short range. If the balloon is 20 kilometers up and it just whispers, will anyone even hear it?
That is the gamble. Mm. But here's the saving grace. Altitude.
Ah.
On the ground, SF7 gets blocked by trees, buildings, hills. But at 20,000 meters, you have line of sight to the horizon.
So the whisper carries for hundreds of kilometers.
It carries just far enough. It's a lifeline.
That is just so cool. But there's another trade-off here that I think is even more dramatic. We talked about the cost of talking. What about the cost of knowing where you are?
The GPS or GNSS, yeah.
I mean, what's the point of a tracking balloon if it doesn't know its own location?
That's the intuition, right. But how much energy does it take to ask a satellite for your coordinates?
I'm guessing it's more than a quick text message.
A lot more. A hot fix, where the GPS chip just needs to update its position, that costs 25 millijoules.
25. And we have 12.4 in the bank?
So you're bankrupt. And a cold fix, where the chip has to search the sky for satellites from scratch, costs 750 millijoules.
Wow. 750. That's not even in the same universe as our budget.
No. It's like trying to buy a Ferrari with the change in your couch. So in emergency mode, the balloon faces this profound dilemma.
Okay.
It has enough energy to speak the 5 millijoules,
mm-hmm.
but it does not have enough energy to figure out what to say.
That is poetic and terrifying. I can scream, but I don't know where I am.
So what do?
I don't know. Do you just shut down?
Yo, you change the strategy. You use what they call gateway-based localization.
Okay.
The balloon just sends a ping, a blank packet that just says, this is ID number 1234, I am alive.
And it sends that out into the void.
And when a gateway on the ground hears that ping, the gateway notes the time and the signal strength.
Oh, so you offload the brain work to the ground.
Exactly. If the gateway in, say, Denver hears a strong signal, you know the balloon is near Denver. If three gateways hear it, you can triangulate its course.
But it's enough.
It answers the big question, where roughly is my balloon?
I love the philosophy here. The source material had this great line about it. It is better to exist and be lost than to die trying to find out where you are.
That is the core tenet of survival engineering. Prioritize existence. Everything else is a luxury.
And this all has to happen automatically, right?
Oh, yeah. The balloon is all alone up there. This is handled by the firmware. The code has a function, get transmission mode.
And it's basically taking its own pulse.
Constantly. Checking voltage and temperature. And it changes its rhythm, too. It doesn't just change what it sends, but how often.
Right. In normal mode, it talks every 5 minutes.
Why not? The sun is shining. But as it gets colder, it slows. Way down. 15 minutes. Then 30 minutes.
Why so long?
Because of the trickle. Even when the main battery is frozen, there might be a tiny microscopic leakage of current. Or the solar panel catches a stray photon.
It needs time to fill those tiny ceramic cups.
Exactly. It has to wait 29 minutes to get enough energy for a 1 second burst.
There was a calculation in the notes about this they called the infinite machine. This one really stuck with me.
Oh, I love this calculation.
They figured out that if you're in Beacon Road sending that cheap 5 millijoule ping every 30 minutes, your average power consumption dropped to 2.8 microwatts.
2.8 microwatts.
I don't think people realize how small that number is.
To put that in context, the little red standby light on your TV, that's probably using 50 to 100 milliwatts.
So this is thousands of times less power.
Thousands. At 2.8 microwatts, you're practically running on ghosts. It means that as long as the hardware isn't physically destroyed, it will never, ever fully die.
It will always scrape together enough energy to say, I'm here.
That is resilience. And when you look at the total daily budget, it's actually ironic. They calculated the total solar energy harvested in a day is about 750 joules.
And the total energy used for talking is what, 5 joules?
Roughly, yes.
So they are solar positive. They make way more money than they spend. So why is this so hard?
Because you can't save it. That is the tragedy of the stratosphere. You earn a fortune during the day, but the battery freezes shut at night.
You can't get your money out.
So you have to live hand to mouth on the loose change you find in the couch cushions, the capacitors.
That really drives home the design philosophy the author mentioned. Design for SF10 performance. Plan for SF7 survival.
It's a mantra we should all probably adopt. Build your system, a balloon, a business, whatever, to perform beautifully when things are good.
But have a trapdoor.
Have a trapdoor. Have a basement you can retreat to where the only goal is don't die.
It's about graceful degradation, not catastrophic failure.
Yes. Most modern tech is brittle. Your
Yeah.
phone is amazing until the battery hits 0%, and then it is a brick.
It doesn't have a mode where it just becomes a beacon.
But the Stratasan does. It strips away its personality.
Mm.
No GPS, no telemetry, no confirmed messages. It sheds everything until it is just a heartbeat.
A heartbeat that's enough to get the team to the landing site to recover it.
Yep.
It's funny. We started this whole thing talking about high-tech radios in space, but the hero of this story isn't the fancy radio chip.
No.
It's the ceramic capacitor.
It really is. It's the simplest, cheapest component on the board. A little chunk of layered dust and metal. But because it relies on physics, not chemistry.
It's the only thing that doesn't flinch when the temperature hits negative 60.
It's the designated survivor.
Exactly. Mm. You know, this whole concept has me thinking about survival mode in our own lives. We are so used to operating at 100%. Maximum bandwidth, GPS on, tracking everything.
High voltage, high current.
Right. But we all hit those cold pockets, burnout, crisis, exhaustion.
I do.
And I feel like we try to keep running at SF12. We try to keep shouting long messages and tracking our location perfectly. And we crash.
We deplete the battery.
Imagine if we had a beacon mode. Just accepting, okay, I cannot do complex tasks today. I cannot figure out where I'm going. But I can send a weak signal every 30 minutes that just says, I am still here.
Better to exist and be lost than to die trying to find out where you are.
I think I'm going to print that out and put it on my wall.
It's good advice for balloons and for humans.
Well, that's a wrap for this deep dive into the Stratasonde energy budget. I want to give a massive shout out to the development team for publishing these notes.
Absolutely.
It is so rare to see this level of transparency about the things that break and the struggles to fix them.
It is. Usually you just see the glossy success video. You don't see the spreadsheet of millijoules that made it all possible.
Physics is a tough negotiator.
Physics always wins. But good engineering can negotiate a truce.
I love that. Negotiating a truce with physics. Thank you all for listening. Keep your capacitors charged, stay warm, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.